Yes, very good morning. If you've just joined me, I have my co-host with me, Richard Manson, who's an event producer with Flying Elephant. Today we have the author of the book, The Thinking Tank, Jade Wild. And what a lady, really, sharing her story as we have looked at the book. And we're going to revisit the book because there's some quite interesting themes, I think, within the book. It's a work of fiction. It's not an autobiography. But inadvertently, we have got into the story of Jay, really, and what led you to this book, the journey of your life. And part of that journey was the loss of your daughter, Rowena, and tragic at the age of 15, back in January 1999. Now, people are texting in wanting to share their story and also to offer you support, Jay. So let's just go through those messages first. One here from Phil saying, "What a great person Jay is. I lost my 19-year-old nephew who drowned in Greece in 2007, suddenly, unexpected, and a huge loss. Life will never be the same, but their spirits are with us. Who cares less what people say? Just build on you and knowing that Rowena is with you. I cry every day for Adam, but tears of joy. I was happy to have Adam in my life for 19 years. Be strong and keep talking to Rowena." And that's from Phil. Thank you, Phil, for sending that message through.
Yeah, thank you very much. That's a lovely message. And can I just say that I always say to people, I was so blessed to have Rowena in my life for 15 and a half years. And, you know, you would never, ever want to take that away, no matter what happens in life.
And somebody's texting here asking, with sudden adult death syndrome, and here, and you know, there'd been nothing in your family, not your husband, your ex-husband,
yeah, right,
or your history. And somebody's texting saying, can you please ask the good lady whether she remembers if her daughter had a nuchal translucency scan on the 11th week of gestation, and was it normal? Now, we looked up this because, you know, Rowena was born in 82.
Yes. 83, gosh.
Yes, 83. So you would have, and, you know, and this is just about, I mean, finding, and it's a kind message, but, you know, finding reasons for why this happened. And clearly you've been through that and back again, you know,
on trying
to reason with what happened and understand why it happened. But we just looked up there in the break what a nuchal scan does. And, well, for one, it's not something you had back then, or certainly not you. The first scan you had was at 18.
No, that's why I said 82, because I was trying to think back to when I would have been 11 weeks pregnant, which would have been 82, and she was born in 83. No, I wouldn't have had a scan at 11 weeks, but actually I did have an amniocentesis at 18 weeks, I believe it was, because there was Down syndrome in our family, and I was also considered, I think, a geriatric mother at the age of 26.
Oh my.
So
wow.
I think that's how we looked upon it
back at the time.
But nothing was found then. I guess the only other thing that you can consider was the fact that at one stage during the birth process, they did have to induce and speed things up because there was a problem with her heartbeat. And, of course, I have looked back on that and thought, you know, was this some kind of warning? Was this some kind of precursor? But I mean, I think that happens so often.
So often, and yeah, nothing
would
ever happen.
Yeah, so I don't want to scare any pregnant ladies out there or anybody who's had that experience. I just think it's not unusual for that to happen.
Mm, yeah, exactly. And it's a difficult one. I mean, you will always look and think, what if, but actually in this situation, the whole nature of sudden death syndrome, adult syndrome, is that it's something there that nobody realised, and it took a life like that, you know, in literally a heartbeat gone. And it's happened. Here, say from Ed saying, "Jay, you're so blessed to know that spiritually your daughter is right there with you. That's the most sensible way of coping. Nothing else worked for me." So thanks for that, Ed, sharing that. And do keep those SMSs coming in. There's many more coming in. We will get to those in a short while. 4001 is the text number. So you started to talk about the depression that you suffered, and this was a couple of years after the death of Rowena. So you, like you said, you got yourself back into work, tried to get a routine, tried to keep yourself occupied.
Yes.
But, you know, that didn't work.
Well, I sort of kept falling apart periodically. I would have a blip and then I'd go back to work and I'd get stronger. The one thing about bereavement is you kind of expect it to be linear when you haven't been through it. You think that if you feel slightly better and able to cope one day, then the next day is going to be better, but it just isn't. There's no right way. There is no blueprint for this. And you can have a series of days that are better and then suddenly, wham, you're back where you started. So what actually happened to me is that I carried on for about, I guess it was about 20 months in the end. And then one day I was just found in my office. I have no recollection of this, by the way. I was just found in my office and I was apparently crying, tearing my hair out, had a photograph of Rowena on my lap. And there's a kind of blank going on here now because I truly don't remember what happened. All I can do is a quote from what my husband Martin told me. Somebody was called, they called Martin. I was taken home, the doctor came, and then I remember being in a bath, remember getting out of the bath, and then nothing. Apparently I was given some tranquilizers and I slept and I slept and I slept. When I came out of the sleeping phase, I found that having been, before Rowena died, quite a gregarious person, that I was actually agoraphobic. I didn't want to go out. I didn't want to speak to anybody. I couldn't answer the phone because, to me, a phone call recalled what happened at 4 o'clock in the morning when I got the news of Rowena's death. So not only was it isolating in terms of the emotional experience that I was going through, I actually chose to isolate myself as much as possible. I couldn't bear to have to explain anything anymore, to talk to people. It was difficult because she died at New Year and there were people thinking that maybe she'd gone on an alcohol binge, you know, that kind of thing. There were so many different issues here that I chose to cut myself off. And it was only when a friend of mine got the key to the front door from my husband and literally marched in, took me by my arm and put me in her car and drove me to quite an amazing therapist that I began to start seeing that there could be a way forward.
And how long were you on medication? How long were you on antidepressants?
It's quite difficult to remember all this now, Suzanne, but, you know, we're talking many months, if not, you know, well into a year or so. And I do seem to remember trying to come off and then having to go back on because actually I thought I was beginning to cope better, but the reason why I thought I was coping better was because of the medication. So, and I know I was still on the medication when I went to see the therapist, and it was only really, it was the therapist who enabled me to see that there was a potential for re-engaging with life.
And how long did you see the therapist for?
I think I saw him for about 10 visits, actually, in the end. You know, it wasn't a vast amount of time. He was quite a brave person. One day, I was saying, oh, this has happened to me, this has happened to me, this has happened to me, because, you know, I'd had the divorce, I'd had various other things happen in my past as well, never fallen into this kind of depression. And he said, so what? And I was completely shocked that he said, so what? And he said, well, look, you can take this with you and move forward and honour Rowena's memory by living life to the full, because she's not here to live it, for goodness sake. Or you could just carry on like this. You know, you could allow yourself to waste your life. And to me, I know that sounds really simplistic, but to me it was a bit of a pivotal moment.
So that's quite a cognitive approach as a therapy.
Yes. And I know that there are all sorts of different ways of approaching this sort of thing, and I think there is no blueprint. It's what works for you as an individual, and he was probably stepping out there and being brave by having a go at this, but to me that worked. It made sense. And I thought, yeah, I feel Rowena's still with me, then, you know, why not take that strength, her spirit, her energy, and put it to better use than hiding myself away.
And slowly but surely you started to do that, and when we come back we'll find out what happened next to Jay and how the book came about, and we'll also share your stories and the text messages coming in.